Hello everyone. I'm delighted to be here at this conference. I first came upon this empirical source, the focus of my paper about Liselina Vagby, a long time ago. So for me, it has been exciting to get the opportunity to revisit these lectures from 1914. And here today, I will give you the main points briefly in terms of message and in terms of rhetoric. But firstly, some historical context is of use. On 5th February 1914, in the evening, in Queen's Hall, Langham Place, London, a lecture series, Problems of the Women's Movement, was about to begin. A decade earlier, the lecturer Liselina Vagby, together with her partner and colleague Lisa Schartow, left Stockholm to settle in London for a life as organiser, public debater for anti-vivisection, pacifism, food reform and humanitarian social politics, and eventually writer of the first biography of August Strindberg in English. Twice in 1903 in a trial against an animal experimenter and in 1913 against a eugenicist, physician and writer, Lizzie had acted in her own defence despite the fact that women were not allowed as lawyers in England at the time. What makes this event in 1914 notable in the history of women's suffrage and feminism, more particularly? Well, it exposed the rather overlooked alignment between feminism, suffrage and animal defence, and the fact that this connection had a long history. It was not unusual for women campaigners to have started their political life in animal defence, anti-vivisection and vegetarianism. These organisations welcomed female leadership and offered training in democratic procedures and public speaking, and they continued to involve people of different genders who were interested in social reforms generally. Animals lived at the hands of men, women lived at the hands of men, and both predicaments invited a critique of male-dominated society. In her noted memoir, Prison and Prisoners, suffragette and vegetarian Constance Lytton highlights this link when she writes about how the injustice of cruelty to animals had opened her eyes to the sufferings to women of every class, every race, every nationality, inspiring her to join the suffrage movement. At the time of Lizzie's lectures, tactics in the movement was becoming increasingly militant, and starting from 1907, Emmeline Pankhurst eradicated the democratic constitution of her women's social and political union, placing herself in an autocratic position. And as a result, Charlotte Despard, socialist chairman of the Women's Vegetarian Union, active with Lizzie on the board of the National Anti-Vivisection Hospital and member of the organizing committee for Lizzie's lectures, left Pankhurst's organization and, along with others, set up the Women's Freedom League, combining democratic procedures with militancy, targeting the situation of workers, holding street demonstrations and acts of civil disobedience, boycotting taxes, chaining themselves to the grills in the House of Commons, withdrawing from the census, and taking a stand against violence, including actions which damaged privately owned property. Over time, the Women's Freedom League became the dominant militant alternative for suffragettes, with 60 active branches in 1911 and being still active in 1918 and in 1928 when women in England won the vote, but not women overseas, continuing until 1961, thus making it the most long-standing British suffrage organisation. In 1914, in this dynamic yet uncertain period in the history of the British suffrage movement, Lizzie was at the height of her career, having for many years and in person performed feminism by widening the public space for women on stage, in the street, in the courtroom as a witness, defendant and plaintiff, and in literature with her much-reviewed biography of Strindberg. We can imagine her on stage in the Queen's Hall, dressed in a comfortable, fashionable feminist reform dress in velvet and fabrics without animal fur or feathers. Now, what did Lizzie choose to speak about, and how did she go about delivering her message? The audience consisted of people who desired progression in society, people that, as Lizzie put it, recognized that the very essence of social life is change. Her overall aim, speaking to this audience, was to give perspectives, historical, international, methodological. She emphasized that female rebellion was not a new phenomenon, and she recounted stories of how women on all continents, in all times, had fought and rebelled against imposed restrictions. She highlighted the overlooked groups of women workers in the industry, prostitutes, other women and children, victims of sexual assaults. And she argued that social development could be described as a steady concession on the part of those who hold power and privileges to those who have none or very few. A battle, she said, between poverty, ignorance, misery, and riches, strength and power. Social movements, Lizzie contended, should work together like instruments in an orchestra to achieve societal change. And one feature in this new social responsibility was the growth of humanitarianism, social reforms which historically were driven by unmarried women. Women, she said, who were perfectly happy in their work and social activities without a husband. She spoke against compulsory motherhood and as the false imprisonment of women, while promoting what she called feminist politics, denoting ethics and justice instead of cleanliness or appeasement, opposing the prevailing hierarchical sex norm, arguing that women were entitled to equal rights and opportunities to transgress the realms ascribed to the sexes. Women were as diverse as men, and men could join women in feminist politics to achieve what she called an androgynous humanitarian state. The word modern surfaced several times in her lecture series. Regarding methodology in the women's movement, the lecture series points to a rather overlooked trajectory of democratic non-violent militancy in the British suffrage movement. In her lectures, Lizzie spoke diplomatically to those in favour of violent militancy, giving the advice not to use methods that would cause harm to the general public, and pointing to the fact that the countries that had already won the vote had done so using other methods. Employing the term extreme militancy, she considered some of these strategies ineffective and proposed instead that militancy acts be performed in a manner reflective of Roman Hortensius' political approach to refusing to pay taxes. Lizzie's militancy critique introduced an element of nuance, contrasting with the attitude of the Swedish movement, which was negative to militancy in general. However, Lizzie's viewpoint on strategy and the developed tactics of the Women's Freedom League might not have been familiar to the Swedish associations. In addition to promoting education and information as prime suffrage methods, Lizzie stressed the importance of working with men in committees of other social campaigns. Thus, she challenged the domineering sole cause policy and sex separatism all-female of the suffrage movement, both in Sweden and in the UK. However, on several issues, I think one can say that Lizzie's views agreed with the tactics and message of her colleague Charlotte Despard and the Women's Freedom League, namely, the vote was not the end goal, but the portal which would enable women to go on to other political matters. The methodology of speaking, rhetoric, mattered a lot to Lizzie. A lecturer, she argued, should not just dogmatically say that this is the case and this is not the case. A lecturer should rather propose thoughts and present raw material for argumentation and inference. She stressed the importance of stipulating definitions, which slowed down the pace of her delivery and gave her time to think and audience time to digest her words. She made references to classical and contemporary non-fiction and fiction, responded to historical and living debaters, and at one instance she created an imagined courtroom theatre in which woman was the plaintiff accusing man of false imprisonment. Frequently, she employed humour to create a relaxed atmosphere in which to convey her thoughts and scoring goals on debaters who were known to disqualify women from public life and politics. Rhetorically, she aligned herself with the 19th century feminist orator tradition of female speakers against slavery and for women's rights, such as Sojourner Truth and Angelina Grimke-Weld. I will end with a remark about the source. When Lizzie, in her last lecture, highlighted the topic of prostitutes, other women and children who had been exposed to sexual assaults, the stenographer stopped transcribing, resuming their work only when Lizzie changed the topic. This may have been the reason as to why the lecture series appears not to have been published. Resistance to feminist freedom of speech was expressed in many ways. Thank you very much for listening.